Because seriously, when's the last time you were sober enough to wake up at 5:30 a.m. to listen live? Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Have an opinion and stick to it, unless you're wrong. Then just listen to what these guys have to say. This is Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good morning, 5:33, Brady and Walker on your Monday. So much to get to. Oh, my goodness. What a weekend it was. Leafs, Raptors, NFL, of course, the Grey Cup matchup is set as well. Hamilton and Calgary will play.
How do you feel emotionally about that?
Lord Stanley's Grey Cup in Vancouver. I don't care.
No?
Well, no. I mean,
I'm always happy. I grew up a Ticats fan as a kid. I'm always happy when they get there, even though I'm not following the league like I used to, but I'm very happy for them that they'll play the Stamps.
It's kind of Stamps will head in as a big time favorite, probably to the tune of 7.5, 8.5 points, I'm guessing, if not even a little bigger.
Yeah.
But Hamilton is about as unheralded as a return team to a Grey Cup as you've ever seen.
Last time they've been to two straight, they lost in 98 in Winnipeg. 26-24 to Calgary, but they beat Calgary the next year. So it's the first time they've gone back-to-back, and they didn't belong on the same field as the Riders last year.
And no.
Regina, everything was working against them, but they didn't play well, and the Riders played great.
So. You could have parachuted, I don't know, the Jacksonville Jaguars in that day at Mosaic Field.
University of Alabama.
Sure, yeah. And they're not beating the Riders a year ago.
45-23 even seems closer than it was. It was a 22-point game. That's just not possible, given what a blowout it seemed like.
And two punt return touchdowns for Banks. It's a big part of the game, right?
Yeah.
And it came to the forefront last night.
Quite a star. So, all right, we're done. No. We'll mention a few more times later in the show. Late night game last night had drama. Dallas Giants always does. I have to apologize to Cowboys supporters. Like, they care what I think, but I thought that was dead and buried when it was 21-3.
How could you have thought that?
Now, I know, because it's Giants Cowboys.
I resisted blasting you too hard on social media, but
yeah, you might have been sleepy or something.
You knew that game was coming right down to the wire, didn't?
That was one Dallas Giants game. I thought, hey, you can go to bed before there's a minute left. Believe it or not, I don't know why.
This was a game that. I mean, you threw out a tweet in the first half. Ah, Tony Romo and all you Cowboys slappies. And this is what Tony Romo
fumbled the ball
this
away.
This is what it was his only turnover like in the last 3 weeks.
I know.
This is how this game looked for the Cowboys and the Giants. Giants hit the ball. They scored a touchdown. Cowboys responded to the field goal. Another touchdown for the Giants, thanks to Odell Beckham Jr., who we'll get to that. Then the Cowboys score a touchdown. Then the Giants score another touchdown. And that's pretty much the end of the first half. It's 21-10. And the Giants have had the ball for 75% of the time. It's not like Tony Romo is throwing picks left.
No,
right.
and I'm disappointed in myself because I'm not that Romo guy. And I never have been. I've always thought I understand why the Cowboys keep him. I understand what they saw in him. I've never thought they should move off him. And he's got 13 touchdowns and one pick in his last 4 weeks. Outside of the first game of the season against the Niners, I don't think he's played a bad game. Eli's played five of them. And I'm never a guy that says, hey, I'd rather have Eli than Tony Romo to win a game. My fear for Tony Romo is just the injury. Like, he's barely practicing during the week, and we're still 5 weeks away from the playoffs. But he didn't take too many shots last night, got through it. Now, Andrew, you worry about him now in a short week. You worry about him going and having to play Thursday against Philadelphia. Dallas has more talent. Dallas has more talent than the Eagles. My fear for the Cowboys is putting Romo in a circumstance like that. Don't forget, he had a week off since going to England and beating the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah.
So that was a real... He had 2 weeks off. Now he's got 3 days off.
It was a great Sunday in the NFL. Certainly the Cowboys made an impression. Who else made an impression on us? Also, the Raptors, once again, have the best record in the Eastern Conference. What a night Saturday as they win in Cleveland. They get the Suns tonight. More to come on that and much more. Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. everything you're talking about, they're talking about. Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Again, Broncos looking for their first lead of the game. They're going to run. Anderson is across for the touchdown.
5:43, good morning, Brady and Walker. Yes, the Miami Dolphins, their playoff hopes suffer a bit of a blow. They dropped to 6-5 after that loss to Denver in Denver, a game that Ryan Tannehill actually played pretty well. So what do you make of the AFC now, Greg? You have the Dolphins at 6-5, but all of a sudden there's these massive teams in that wild card hunt. The Chiefs, the Steelers, Cleveland is still lurking at 7-4. They're all 7-4, as is San Diego, who wins. And then with a victory tonight, Baltimore's in that conversation too.
Sometimes it's about schedule, though. Now it's safe to sort of look at it, because everybody has tough games and games that aren't so tough when there's 9 or 10 left. When you get down to 5, it's pretty clear some teams have tougher roads. Let me give you Miami's. At the Jets next Monday night. Jets play, obviously, in Detroit against Buffalo today. You know, weird one because of the snow. 7 o'clock start for that one. Miami's home against Baltimore at Foxborough. That's a tough one, obviously. Minnesota at home, the Jets at home. They could easily go 4-1 the rest of the way. Can San Diego find 4 more wins among these games at Baltimore, home against New England, home against Denver, at San Fran, at Kansas City? They may lose them all. They'll be underdogs probably, Andrew, in all of them. And they've got their game up on the Miami Dolphins right now. Now, neither of those teams could end up making the playoffs the way the AFC is, right? Look at Cleveland. Eventually, your record's your record. And there they are with Pittsburgh, who had the bye this week at 7-4.
And they got last year's leading receiver, Josh Gordon, back. And he looked fantastic in that win over Atlanta.
So you've got four, basically for two spots, you have 4 7-4 teams. Pitt, Cleveland, KC, and San Diego.
And maybe Baltimore if they win tonight. So
yeah,
they're
7-4. And the Dolphins at 6-5, and Buffalo potentially at 6-5. This is why I was surprised how many people were very cavalier about, it doesn't matter where the Bills play, their season's done. Hey, take Orton out and start starting E.J. Manuel. Not yet. I know we're getting there, but not yet. It's a pretty big game for Buffalo today. And that said, Miami and Buffalo still at 6-5 are going to be probably on the outside looking in, but Miami has a very favorable schedule. Andrew, we talked about it Friday morning about what that loss that Kansas City suffered against the Raiders, what that cost them, and that was sort of control of their own destiny. Sitting there at 8-3, they'd still be tied with Denver for the division lead. Everybody else was beating the Raiders. That was a rough one to give up, and yet the Raiders kind of went and took it, in all honesty, at the end of that game.
5:46, Brady and Walker. So this is what my Saturday night looked like, and I wonder how many people were in the same boat, and I wonder if there's even a sense of I have a small sense of guilt, I suppose. So I go to the Leafs game. So it's Leafs Wings, and I'm just up in the press box. I'm not working. I'm just there taking it in. And it's after 40.
Did you let them know ahead of time you'd be going? Was there a seat for you?
I did not. I went to the other end.
Oh, I'm glad to see that policy is working.
Yeah. By the healthy scratches or whatever they were. So it's 1-1 after 40. It's a great game. Leafs are playing well. Wings are hanging in, whatever. And I'm following this Raptors game on social media, and you see LeBron James just go showtime in the first 10 minutes. Raptors were down 10-0 and looked like they were getting blown out. Then they start to creep back. And before you know it, they're on a huge run, and we get to the half, and it's a three-point ball game, which was once a, 15-point deficit in
the
first quarter?
It's a lead for the Raps, 56-54 at the half. Yeah.
So I leave after 40. In a tie hockey game, I get out of the rink so I can find
$200 tickets.
So I can find some place with two screens.
Yeah.
So I watch Tyler Bozak score a pair in the third, and the Leafs beat the Red Wings. That's good.
So you felt it was asking too much to ask some of the TVs in the press box to be switched to the
TVs.
Cavs-Raptors game.
Not that I can watch, right? I mean, you can watch one or the other if you're
up Shanahan
there.
And Dubas don't want you putting the Raptors game on in the press box. I understand that.
So
sure.
I leave after 40, and I find a seat where I can see two screens and watch the game simultaneously.
Okay. All right.
And
they're serving.
Sure.
Doesn't hurt.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt.
It's Saturday.
And you couldn't look away. The Raptors just hand it to Cleveland. In Cleveland.
Yeah. And an explainable game. They're down, 12-0, I want to say. It was at least 10-0. You know when you change the channel and there's still that little bit at the bottom and it's a blurb and it's like, this is what your event is? I saw 0 and I'm like, well, maybe they have 10 And then the blurb goes away, and you're like, no, they have zero.
Yeah, they didn't score for the first 6 minutes.
When I pushed it.
But they lose that game by 17, and you say, yeah, well, whatever.
Yeah,
you
they played the night before last night. Cleveland's angry. They lost to Washington the night before in Washington. And, hey, the Cavs were bound to wake up sooner or later. It's been that kind of a dreary, dismal start for the Cavaliers. Haven't found a lot of teamwork. They haven't found their rotation. And now they're losers of four straight. And the Raptors happen to be 11-2. Look, Cleveland's 5.5 games behind Toronto. They can catch the Raptors, but I mean, we got 69 games left for Toronto and 70 for the Raptors. And it's okay to start talking about the fact that, God, maybe, just maybe, we've got a first overall in the conference team here in Toronto. And who knows for how long, and if it's going to be that team at the end of the 82 games. Right now, we wouldn't be surprised. They're going to can this team lose four straight? Can this team lose 7-10? I look at schedules and how they play, and unless they start losing a starter or two to injury, and everyone else is, then I don't see it.
The Eastern Conference, and especially the Atlantic Division, it feels like where it is right now, that if the Raptors stay healthy, there's just only so many games that they can lose.
That they could lose, yeah.
Right? I mean, even the first five or six of games this season, Raptors didn't play particularly well in all of them. They had some bad starts. They had that, you know, wonderful come-from-behind win in Boston early on. But it's just in a 48-minute ball game, talent's going to win out in this league a whole lot.
Yeah, they have three games this week, two at home. Phoenix tonight, we've got that game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. They go to Atlanta Wednesday. They host Dallas Friday. Andrew, they could lose two of those three games, and I'm not changing my mind about who the Raptors, that's the NBA, is inconsistency at various times. Sometimes teams are consistently inconsistent. If they win all three of these games, then it goes beyond just getting a little attention south of the border. They're 14-2, and we're all talking like, yeah, this team could win 60 games, and very few teams do win 60 games anymore.
550, Brady and Walker. Ryan Faber, our producer, is in with Now and Then.
Now and Then, a hopefully but potentially not entertaining look back at some of the great and not so great moments in this day's history.
I'll be back in time. Ryan Faber in, participating in Movember for is this third straight year? Two of three? Two out of three ain't bad? Which is it?
We all did it together two years ago. Was that 2 years ago?
So this is
last year too?
Yeah. Three straight years.
Yeah, it's not even itching that much.
And you're a week away. Do you see the finish line in sight? Does your wife see the finish line in sight?
Walker ever had a mustache? She's used to it now.
Ever had a mustache?
No, other than just
accidentally
shave for a while. Last year, I felt it was more. I guess you were posting more Twitter pictures. You had more of the.
I'm not.
Are you trimming it a little bit also? More than last year?
A little bit.
For a little landing strip look there on your lip?
Yeah. I had more of the handlebars last year. It's
gross.
It is gross. Not really.
Gross was Brady's mustache because it was wispy.
Wasn't wispy. You're acting like it was Sidney Crosby in the playoffs.
Surprise.
It was not.
Brady can't grow a mustache. Me shocked.
Yeah, I'm not that hairy.
It was gross. It was like if Kevin Spacey. You ever see Kevin Spacey with a mustache in a movie? It was like that. It's kind of weird. November the 24th, 1960. Wilt Chamberlain sets an NBA record for most rebounds in a game. How many? Guess.
Walker.
32.
Incorrect. Brady.
43.
55 rebounds in one.
That's one bad shooting team on the other side.
No, 53 rebounds and 20,000 women. Which is a more likely stat?
That's 20,000. I think it's still 20,000, but 50. It's just a lot of, 5'8 white guys on the other team, you know?
Or a lot of offensive rebounds. You get four rebounds on one basket.
Right. 1963, Lee Harvey Oswald, killed by Jack Ruby live on TV 2 days after he shot JFK.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm a conspiracy theorist.
But nothing else, just that.
So you like the Oliver Stone movie?
Yeah.
I remember going to see that in the theaters when I was 11. It was great.
Dramatic. Dramatic as all hell, sure.
Speaking of creepy, Tommy Lee Jones' character in that movie, insanely creepy.
Clay Shaw? Sure.
Yes.
Got his Oscar nomination for it.
There you go. White hair, creepy. What else? Oh, 1996, the Snow Bowl. Argos topped the Eskimos in at.
That's too much CFL talk.
This is the one week.
That was downtown Eddie Brown, I believe.
Yeah,
you
made a nice
catch off the foot. Yeah.
Doug Flutie.
You never see it in top 10 lists or anything.
No. No. And 2002, the Alouettes get their first Grey Cup win.
Hey, that's enough CFL talk, fellas.
Can't be their first.
After returning to Montreal.
They beat the Eskimos in Edmonton.
I was there for that game.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
How many Grey Cups have you attended? In
I've been to, I don't know, four Grey Cups.
Really?
I've been Favre? To zero.
Brady, next year's your year. No, I have never been to a, I've been to a, I haven't been to a CFL playoff game, no. Thinking I had for a minute there. No, I haven't.
How are you guys self-respecting Canadians and you've never been
loved
to a Grey Cup?
Taken as a kid, I would have loved to have gone, but you know we didn't have much money.
You know what? I'm pretty certain I went to an Argos playoff game at some point when I was like 12 years old.
At the X.
No.
Okay. At the
At the Dome.
You know what? Just fold the if people think like you, just fold the league and give the riders an NFL team. Just do it.
It is bad, though. I should know that I've been to an Argos playoff game.
Yeah, like, you
probably
as a
should. Toronto,
yeah. You know you went to a Jays playoff game.
I did. Game one World Series? 92.
I did not know
I've been to a National Lacrosse League playoff game. That's two of them, so actually.
Going pro.
Okay, birthday time. Keith Primo's birthday today.
Ah.
Greg, you have a guess here.
Oh, my heavens. I'm thinking 89 draft. So he's 18, as I was saying. 43.
Correct.
43. I'll stick with 43.
You're right. Former Red Wing. Knock it down. Surprise.
Shock. Good top five. Yager was in that top five. Trevor Linden.
Scott Sissons.
Shouldn't have taken
it. Oh, yeah. That was bad. Catherine Heigl's 36.
She's back with a new show that looks like Homeland on NBC.
Yeah.
People don't like her. My wife doesn't like her. Really? You know how my theory about Jennifer Love Hewitt? Maybe more women hate Catherine Heigl.
She's apparently a bad person or what?
Yeah.
Ryan Fitzpatrick's 32 and still terrible. And in the number one song, this is big for Brady, of course, 1984. It's Wham, Wake Me Up Before You Go.
I've not, George Michael, man, talk about getting the ladies. I think 20,000 women, George Michael, anybody?
Well, you would have thought so.
I don't believe that 20,000 stat. There's got to be some repeats in there.
I found the bottom line of the stat. If Wilt started at the age of 15 until the age of 55... You need 500 different women a year.
Yeah, that's just...
times 40 years to sleep with 20,000 women. 500 a year. 365 days. You need to be busy.
Well,
busy show.
He's doing something different at halftime.
I don't think I've had that many meals. Like, it takes a concerted effort. It really
does.
Well,
neither has Will. There's only so much time you can take.
5-6, Brady and Walker. The Leafs roll over Detroit is salute gate behind them as they sit with a record of 11-8-1. Brady and Walker. Back at 6:02, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. The Leafs drop Detroit to win their second straight.
Bozak getting around the defense. He's trying to cut in a goal. He's right in a goal. Goal! Holy mackerel! A shorthanded goal! And the Leafs lead 2-1. Here's a chance for Holland breaking down the left wing. Holland's in over the line trying to drive to the net. A shot. He scores! Peter Holland!
You're listening to Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
I have the Toronto Maple Leafs righted the ship. It is 6:03, Brady and Walker. I'm Andrew Walker. He is Greg Brady. And Greg, after a tumultuous week in Leafland, with a lot of spotlights and a lot of weird things happening, salute gate being right at the top, after that win over Tampa and then Saturday night, a very impressive victory over Detroit, have the Leafs kind of quelled the outrage a little bit here?
Little bit. You know, it's great hearing those clips, Joe Bowen on the call, the Tyler Bozak breakaway goal, Peter Holland. As I've been saying all year, their strength down the middle is unparalleled. Maybe
right.
In NHL history.
Except for Kadri.
Their strength down the middle. Yeah. A Trevor Smith call-up has been helpful. Has it quelled? It's quieted the beat of some drums. We went into that Tampa game. See, everyone forgets now. The Tampa game was before the whole saluting controversy, non-controversy. We tried to keep... By the way, we were partly responsible. We tried to say Friday, hey, we're talking about it because we don't want anyone else to. That didn't work out so well Friday morning up until about 9 o'clock. It really didn't work. We'll use reverse psychology next time and tell people that it's a big story and that they should talk about it instead of telling people it's a non-story. But, hey, they've outscored their opposition 9-3 in the last two games. I think there's certainly one team that I think people feel is notably superior and has played superior, and that's the Lightning. And the other one might be battling it out with the Red Wing or with the Leafs when it's all said and done, and that's Detroit. So maybe you get some quiet perspective over the next few days. They don't play until Wednesday. They go to Pittsburgh. Ratchet down your expectations potentially for that game. And then they're home a lot with Washington, Dallas, New Jersey, a bunch of other teams through early December because they go away during the Christmas break.
Answer me this, because I'm trying to differentiate between what usually happens in Leafland and what's happening right now. Because we know the bigger picture issues here. Brendan Shanahan comes in. By all accounts, the team's not great. It looks like Dave Nonis and Randy Carlyle are lame ducks, and we'll see what happens next year. Right, we know that's a conversation, but in and of itself, people are freaking out over this team. Right, you can't take a misstep right now without having the media all over you, without having fans all over you. We've talked about throwing the jerseys and the salute gate and all that. Then the dust clears, and there they are at 11-8-1, and you know, weekend wins over Detroit and Tampa, as you mentioned. They have quality victories on
the
road
saying,
this season.
I know what you're saying. What the hell is everyone so damn upset about? Is it just three or four awful games out of 21? Like, say, I don't know, the Canadiens played last night. Like the team that beat them, the Rangers have played five or six awful games this season in front of their home fans.
Leafs Nation is reactionary, has been for years. We know that. But I feel like it's hit a really irresponsible point lately.
Yeah.
Right? This team's not great, but they could end up being in the playoffs. Like, I really believe that. I don't think that's bad.
To me, is it the, who knows if it's the 80% rule, 90% rule? Are 80% of fans the rational ones, and we only hear the loud screaming guys and girls? It's like the media, okay? Are 80% of the media responsible, objective, articulate? And then there's 20% that wreck it. There's 20% of bad cops. There's 20% of bad teachers. Is it just one of those scenarios where the loudest voices are the ones you shouldn't be listening to?
I suppose. But like our buddy Cathal Kelly had a really good piece over the weekend on the Leafs and the big picture, small picture stuff. And it was very well written. But then as I read it, I couldn't help but think, if someone came from outer space, reads Kelly's piece, which we'll post up on our Twitter account, Brady and Walker, you would think that the Leafs are 3-16. That's what you'd think. And they're not. They're 11-8-2.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. They're on pace for close to 90 points. And 90 points, I mean, have we not used the phrase bubble playoff team all year? And I don't think there's been a moment. There has not been a moment in 21 games. We're at the quarter pole, just a little bit past it, of the season, Andrew. And I don't think there's been a moment when either you've come in or I've come in the morning after a Leaf game and said, you know, maybe I got it all wrong. I think we've hinted maybe they're a little bit better than we thought. And we've hinted, maybe some of these specific problems, like, hey, they're not getting the goaltending per se that they were getting in October and November of last year. But you know what? They play better as a group. They're utilizing all four lines. They're not getting pounded on the shot clock like ducks in a shooting gallery. So maybe they offset each other. We've never once come in and said, boy, this team is a clear bottom eight team, and we've never said, hey, this team is destined for the conference finals. But you're right. There's a lot, the back and forth. Like I said, if they lose to Pittsburgh, hey, 6-1 Wednesday, do I feel any better or any worse about their ultimate fate at the end of the season? No. How could I?
608, Brady and Walker, we have Toronto hockey tickets to give away to you. Our first clue, name that mystery player, coming up at 6:14 this morning. First, let's get you what you need to know after a busy weekend.
This is your Monday Morning Six-Pack. Six things you need to start your day.
Number six. Oh, this is exciting. And I feel like this was floating out there already, but I guess they made it official yesterday. And that is the Super Bowl, which is coming up in Phoenix February the 1st, will feature, for a halftime show, Katy Perry.
What's that do for you?
I'm incredibly excited. Not from a musical standpoint, but we all have our lists, our guy lists. And she's right at the top of mind, if not sitting on top of the mountain.
Yep, she's with Elle Miles, with the Nicole Kidmans and Gwyneth Paltrows and Elizabeth Taylors of the world.
Elizabeth Taylors.
I tried to slide that one in there. So now, do you think children will be able to watch? Will this be a risque halftime show? Will she play it straight?
Well, I would hope so. She's pretty risque.
Yeah, I know, but isn't that what they wanted to avoid? They had a very sensible Bruno Mars halftime last year. The Chili Peppers came out and didn't. They weren't just wearing socks. Beyonce the year before kept the vast majority of her clothes on.
I don't know where I read it, but I did read something to the effect of, the NFL and the FCC or whatever it is encouraging Katy Perry to keep her cleavage to a minimum, which kind of defeats the whole purpose of the thing. But I digress.
Yeah.
Number five,
yeah.
Grey Cup matchup is set. There was a lot going on yesterday with all the NFL games as well, and yet Rogers hometown hockey on City, pretty good matchup between the Rangers and Canadiens. But the Hamilton Ticats do get by the Montreal Alouettes in the East Final. So very quietly, it's been two Grey Cups in a row for Hamilton. And out west, the team that will be the favorite next Sunday in Vancouver, the Stamps, just run over the Edmonton Eskimos.
Kind of contrast the two games. Hamilton, Montreal, very close throughout. In fact, it was really just the punt return that broke it open in the fourth quarter for Hamilton. And Calgary, big lead. There was some speculating Edmonton was getting back into it. Never got close enough to make it dramatic in the fourth quarter. So technically, Hamilton-Montreal was the closer game, though it was a 16-point win.
And last year's Lou Marsh winner, John Cornish, had one of the CFL all-time plays to remember with the 78-yard catch and run to put that one away.
Don't forget, Imagine Dragons will play halftime at the Grey Cup. Keep, fellas, keep your clothes on. Honestly, keep them all on, all four of them. Even the bearded guy, keep your clothes on.
Number four, baseball free agency continues, and a report late last night, early this morning, from Ken Rosenthal reports that today should be the day that the Boston Red Sox come to terms with free agent shortstop / infielder, I guess, Hanley Ramirez. It'll be a lot of dough. You'll be worried about this guy breaking down eventually, but they have the dough to do it, as the big boppers in the AL East do. And the big question will be, does Pablo Sandoval join him in Boston?
It's very strange. He played some third base with the Marlins, some third base with the Dodgers in the last couple of years, but he's a shortstop by trade. Does he take that spot? Does Pablo Sandoval slide right in beside him? And as you said, Andrew, Ramirez is not getting any younger. Is he going to keep having the range he's starting to be limited by, being 34, 35 years old, or is this a go-for-it year for the Red Sox? You got quite a powerful infield if your infield is Napoli, Pedroia, Sandoval, and Ramirez.
Yes. What do you do with the rotation is going to be the question, right?
Absolutely. Can you pitch?
Number three, Leafs weekend, as mentioned, that big 4-1 win over the Detroit Red Wings Saturday night. Two goals for Tyler Bozak, and now they get a little time off. They had an off day yesterday. They will visit the Pittsburgh Penguins coming up Wednesday. In that game, they do hope to get Joffrey Leupel back in the lineup tonight on Sportsnet. It's the Penguins and the Bruins. Number two, NFL Sunday Nighter. The Cowboys come back for a 31-28 primetime win over the New York Giants. One of the games of the week. Anything else make a big impression on you in terms of, boy, I didn't see this team coming?
Nothing leaps off the page. Denver was in some trouble. Down 28-17 late in the third. Came back. A lot of touchdown drives for Peyton Manning. It's just funny how it's an up-down league. Philadelphia looked off the map against Green Bay last week, just destroyed, and they beat a very bad Tennessee team, and Green Bay struggles on the road against Minnesota. And you got the Bears revitalizing themselves. They're not going to make the playoffs, but they've proven they're not awful either.
Two Monday nighters tonight, including, of course, those Buffalo Bills that'll take on the New York Jets in Detroit. The Bills, it's safe to say, looking to save their season tonight. The other Monday night, a pretty good one, as Baltimore visits the New Orleans Saints. By the way, we do have Bills and Cleveland Browns tickets for you all week long. Tune in at 7:30 this morning, and we'll tell you how you can win those.
NFC South drama interesting to you? Would you almost pull for a Saints loss? Then you'd have a 4-7 team, a 4-7 team, a 3-7-1 team, and a 2-9 team.
It's embarrassing. We went through this a few years ago with teams in the NFC West. It was embarrassing that you had one of these teams in the playoffs with other quality teams in the NFL on the outside.
You're gonna have a team hosting the best wild card that might be about a 9 or 10 point underdog.
Yeah,
the first week.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, it could very well be that. And the number one thing you need to know, the Toronto Raptors, they have the best record in the Eastern Conference after a massive weekend, something that we'll get into at 6:22. Are we actually talking about the possibility of a Toronto sports franchise being in a championship series? It might not be as far away as you think. We want to send you to the ACC coming up as Toronto takes on Washington Saturday night. Ovechkin and the Capitals in town, courtesy of the Great Blue Heron Casino. We'll give you clues all morning. Name us that mystery player. Here is your first clue today. There is a good chance that this player will be pretty happy about the Ticats Grey Cup berth that they clinched yesterday. It's clue number one. Your next clue coming up this morning at 7:14.
Coming up at 6:22, more on the Raps and why we may have even underestimated the buzz in this city for a very, very good NBA team.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Always the best sports talk on Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Williams now covered by LeBron James. He's going to step back and go at LeBron now. Crossover dribble. Oh, my goodness. Look at Lou Williams. He just took LeBron to school on a step back from 21.
I don't know what any of that means. It is 6:23.
Give you a step back in a minute.
Brady and Walker, Eric Smith with the call as the Raptors are sitting with the best record in the NBA's Eastern Conference. Coming in this morning, would have loved to say the best record in the NBA, but they're 11-2 in Memphis, who they beat already.
Memphis has rebounded.
12-2, yeah.
Three wins in the last 5 days after losing here. Yeah.
So the Raptors, they demolished the Milwaukee Bucks on Friday night. At one point, they led that game by 50, which was their biggest lead in franchise history. They move on to Cleveland, and after a tepid start, dismantle LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers, the team that was supposed to run away with the Eastern Conference.
When's the last time you had a result? It's so much harder in baseball because there's just so many games. When's the last time you've had a result that you can think of with a Toronto team where you would almost expect a letdown of some sort? And then it starts to happen. It's not fiction anymore. It's materializing right before your eyes. It's 12-0. It's 18-6. It's 24-8. And then it's 34-21 at the end of the first. And Cleveland has shot 71% at the end of the first quarter. And people are digging in on the Raptors saying, oh, you got to be more consistent. And then it turns around to the extent that it did, to the extent where they outscore the Cavs by 15 in the second, 12 in the third, and cherry on top, even three to go away to a 17-point win in the fourth. I can't think of the last time you would have absolutely excused the Raptors. You would have said, hey, guys, yeah, I get it, and you're playing LeBron, and it's one of those things. And then to turn it into not even a nail-biter at the end. A nail-biter.
They crushed them.
To where it was obvious on the broadcast that there were let's-go Raptors chants in Cleveland. There were a lot of people that traveled for this game, and whether they were, you know, it's a quick little trip around the lake, I suppose, but you still got to go on a Saturday. We may have even underestimated, based on last spring, Andrew, because it was new to you, it was new to me, it was kind of new to the city, how big the team could get with a very good regular season. Because we just thought, well, it'll be all about the playoffs. But now already, how many times do you and I hear, you guys should talk more Raptors on the show? And sometimes they're right and sometimes they're wrong. You can't overdo it. You can't overdo it by accident.
It's happening a lot. It really is. To answer your question about the surprise victory or something that shocks you, it is difficult to do in baseball, but my comparable would be late in the season when Seattle comes into town fighting for the playoff lives and the Jays scored like 10 runs in an inning off of Felix Hernandez, including that Dalton Pompey shot. Remember how shocking that was, right? It was unbelievable.
There was a Jay Happ win on that Thursday against Justin Verlander, and we were thinking, well, they've already won 2 out of 3
sure,
in Detroit.
Yeah.
Now they're going against Mr. Two-time Cy Young. It's okay if they lose, and they didn't.
So what about the buzz? I won't lie to you. I'm hearing about the Raptors more and more anywhere I go. Saturday night, and I fall, I don't say victim to it because I'm enjoying it, but Saturday I was at the Leafs game. It was a good Leafs game. and it was 1-1 after 40. I had to, and I wasn't working, I was just at the game. I had to leave so I could find a second TV screen so I could watch both, because I wasn't going to miss that Raptors second half in Cleveland.
Yeah, you knew something dramatic was happening. Like, and the juxtapose from 2 years ago where they're starting the, now after the short season, Dwayne Casey's first season was only 66 games. And coming into 12-13, they've drafted Valanciunas, but he's not going to be here this year. And the message from Brian Colangelo was, and this is unbelievable, this is 24 months ago, hey, we're going to be bad. Everybody get ready. We're going to be really batting down the hatches. We won't be good. And then the frustrating thing about them was they were 34-48, drafting eighth, and they weren't even bad enough to get in close to Anthony Davis or get Bradley Beal or draft Damian Lillard. And you're like, God, you people can't do anything right. And now, yeah, totally on top of the world, it feels like, for the time being.
Two really fun impressions on the weekend. Well, in that Friday when we got our first look at the first round pick, Bruno Caboclo, who ran around and scored 8 points in garbage time, dying minutes, and the crowd was chanting his name. Hilarious. And then Saturday night, it was the Lou Williams show. Answer me this. How did Masai Ujiri ever get Lou Williams for John Salmons? What's happening here?
It's an incredible trade with Atlanta to think of. And you think, you'd barely have noticed him coming in. Lou Williams probably played 7 or 8 games at the Air Canada Center as a member of the Atlanta Hawks, and you barely would have spotted him. But it's funny. I'm watching that game with my wife. She was at the game Friday night and wrote on it in the Globe. And she says, watch this. And right before the half, Williams is going to post up, take a three, and it'll go in. I'm like, people shoot 40% on their threes. You better be right about this. It's exactly what he did.
He's done it like six of the last 8 quarters.
I know. 36 points on 19 shots is unbelievably efficient. 36 points in 30 minutes is incredibly efficient. And yet, the great thing about this team is there's no clamoring to start him, right? No one's saying you like him being out there 29 minutes.
Right. But six man, right?
Yeah. No one's telling him, hey, play him as a, you know, play him as a, at the three instead of Terrence Ross. Give him some of DeMar DeRozan's time. Who, if anything, Andrew, that's the one thing about this I would say is Raptors Suns tonight, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, we've got the game. DeMar DeRozan hasn't had a lot of games where you go, that looks like an all-world player. That I know he is. That looks like an all-world player. That looks like an all-star. That looks like a guy who is coming up to the next level. If anything, they've survived some very inconsistent shooting nights from DeMar DeRozan. Very good against Memphis on Wednesday. He was 1-for-8 against Milwaukee. And they still scored 124 points. He was 7-of-18, couldn't hit. You know, he's not even trying threes anymore. That's not what he does. He's not an outside shooter anyway, but it's an element of his game he's not even bothering with anymore.
Suns at Raptors, 7:30 tonight. You can hear it right here, Sportsnet 590, The Fan pregame with Eric and Jonesy coming up at 7. Don't forget, head coach Dwayne Casey going to join the show as well, coming up at 8:42 this morning. 6:29, Brady and Walker, busy week 12 in the NFL. You got a couple Monday nighters tonight, Greg, but we knew it, we blew it from week 12 in the NFL. What surprised you? When you're watching, what were you wrong on and what were you right on point with?
Well, I'll give you what I'm right on. It was one of those weird weeks. I might have been right as many times as wrong, but I did see, a bit of a step forward for the Cincinnati Bengals. I've been hard on the Bengals. I didn't pick them to make the playoffs. I didn't pick them to win the division. People have had their criticism of Andy Dalton. I think he's fine as a top half-tier quarterback at the very least. And that was a very good road when they played against, admittedly, the best defensive player, at least the best defensive lineman, J.J. Watt, and the rest of the Houston Texans. No sacks for J.J. Watt. Cincinnati protected very well. They got Giovanni Bernard back, but Jeremy Hill was even better running the ball. So they looked very balanced going in. The Bengals have this weird record. I don't know if you heard about it on the weekend. 1 o'clock Sunday games, they have this unbelievable success rate. Play them at 4, play them at night, obviously play in the playoffs. They have a lot of trouble, but they got past the Texans. Give me your new it.
Well, I mean, and the one thing to add on to your Cincinnati thought, they are, and when they were struggling and everyone was down on them earlier, I did caution that you can't judge this team when they don't have A.J. Green. He makes everybody better on that. They're a different team. Andy Dalton's a different quarterback. A.J. Green had 12 catches yesterday. What I was right on yesterday, well, I mean, maybe some would be a little late to the party, but it was probably about 4 or 5 weeks ago that I was just raving about Odell Beckham Jr. And obviously a lot of guys were in him in college and stuff like that. But the first time he suited up for the Giants and you kind of knew it was going to be a lost season, it was look out for this kid. And I think last night was his official coming out party, Greg, in that loss to the Dallas Cowboys with the play of the best catch I've ever seen.
I mentioned on Twitter, I've never had a play. And that includes, people asked, they said, the golden goal, Sidney Crosby? I said, no, I've never had a play where people had a wow factor about it. The golden goal, it's amazing, but somebody's going to score. It's overtime. It's not something that you absolutely positively cannot believe that you saw. And that's what the Odell Beckham catch was last night.
Yeah. I mean, and Twitter wasn't around when I want to think of a comparable. Vince Carter jumping over the French center at the Olympics, right? Is that the equivalent here?
It's pretty close. So, and Beckham, the third wide receiver drafted. I don't know if Buffalo felt like they gave up too much for Sammy Watkins. Time will tell. But Tampa drafted Mike Evans, seventh overall from Texas A&M. And he's okay. He's got great speed, great length. But you, 6'5 guy, but you haven't noticed him like you've noticed Odell Beckham. He's got 8 touchdowns this year, so it hasn't been that bad a season.
All right, we knew it, we blew it. What did you blow watching NFL this weekend?
Well, beyond the, I definitely did count out the Cowboys, didn't pick them in the game, counted them out in the game itself. But what I also blew is San Diego being a contender. And I want to almost withdraw my prediction for the playoffs. And people say, well, wait, they've won the last 2 weeks. They went from 5-1 to 5-4. Now they're back rolling right now. But there's something sort of flawed. The Rams kind of gave them that game at the very end. And I haven't been impressed by a touchdown win against the Raiders and barely squeaking by St. Louis soon afterwards. And Phillip Rivers threw a bad interception yesterday, was sacked a few times when he's got to get rid of the ball. I know he's smarter than that. They had a good game from Ryan Matthews, but their schedule's too tough. They'll probably finish 8-8, 9-7. And that's, boy, who knows what it's going to take to make it in the AFC this year. You might have 4 7-7 win teams already in the AFC if Baltimore wins tonight in the AFC North.
Yeah, what I was wrong on this week was the Cleveland Browns going into Atlanta. I thought this might have been a trap game for Cleveland. They were getting one of their best players back in Josh Gordon. I almost thought there'd be this, you know, forcing the ball into Gordon. He wouldn't quite be up to speed. And the Falcons, who are admittedly lousy but better at home, would deal the Browns a blow to their playoff hopes. Didn't happen. Billy Kunda fits that late field goal. Josh Gordon was actually terrific. And with that added weapon, you wonder if Cleveland isn't the favorite to win the AFC North now at 7-4.
Now I'm leaning back towards Cincinnati. But you could have been right. You should have been right. And I picked Atlanta in the game, too. Mike Smith's clock management at the end. He called a timeout with 55 seconds left before a 3rd-and-2 play. I mean, he kicks that field goal with 49 seconds left, and it's 53 yards as it is. I mean, he didn't set Matt Bryant's going, you got to be kidding me. You can't get 8 yards closer. You got tons of time left, but you're taking timeouts, and he tried a deep pass to Devin Hester.
Well, he's on borrowed time anyway. We know that.
Well, the best part was Arthur Blank, the owner, sat in the front row at the Mike Smith press conference. That's be like our boss is coming here and watching the show at this hour. It's not, you don't want to do that.
6:35, Brady and Walker. At 6:42, the Boston Red Sox expected to sign a big-name free agent today. We'll tell you who it is.
And Jerry Howarth had interesting comments last week with Jeff Blair on R.A. Dickey. We didn't get a chance to weigh in on Friday. We're going to today.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Keep it here for more Brady and Walker, only on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good morning, 6:43, Brady and Walker. R.A. Dickey's future in Toronto with the Blue Jays, is it up in the air? Could we be talking in the coming days, weeks, months of an R.A. Dickey trade? We'll get into that, but first, the Boston Red Sox, Greg, a busy day ahead of them, as according to Fox's Ken Rosenthal, are expected to sign free agent infielder Hanley Ramirez. Could Pablo Sandoval be that far behind today?
Yeah, you wonder now, are they trying to complete the left side of the infield in one fell swoop? Padres still interested in Sandoval. They're the team that gets mentioned a lot, and it just doesn't seem like he's San Francisco bound. Not that you would automatically re-sign with your team. There's a report from Richard Griffin that that's the most positive thing I've read on Melky Cabrera in the last 3 months, maybe, since his injury in September. But either way, Ramirez is going to be 5 years, $80 million from the sounds of it. He's 30 years old, had a pretty healthy season last year, but doesn't quite look the player, and how could he, that he was when he was 25, 26, coming to free agency with the Miami Marlins. So it's who are we to tell the Red Sox how to spend their money? But if anybody wondered, they are headed right back in. They've got Cespedes for another couple seasons if they want him, and this would make for a very powerful infield. But as you put it, outside of Clay Buchholz, who are your other four starters that you're counting on day in, day out? And from having a very reliable rotation 2 years ago, that's a bit of an issue. And then Xander Bogaerts. They like Xander Bogaerts a lot. Are they moving him like they moved Jose Iglesias last year? They've got a lot of promising middle infielders. The Will Middlebrooks era seems indeed over if they're signing either Ramirez or Sandoval.
Free agency will be a topic coming up in the next couple of weeks. Of course, it continues to be. But as it revolves around the Blue Jays, I think you're going to see a lot more R.A. Dickey conversation in the next week. This was Jerry Howarth, voice of the Blue Jays, here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on the Jeff Blair Show last week.
R.A. is kind of a man unto himself on an island, and you don't want that in your clubhouse. He gives you 200 innings. He goes out there and he starts 30 games. That's great. But you need more than that. You need someone who is right there with his team, communicates with his team, listens, gets involved with the team. I don't see R.A. doing that. So for me, I can see the team already starting to move in a different direction. And you have to have people who are part of a 25-man roster, not a separate entity.
We're not used to hearing that from the voice of the Blue Jays, Jerry Howarth. And I wonder, Greg, is R.A. Dickey... are the bags already packed in an off-season trade?
And Mike Wilner was on with Ben Ennis yesterday afternoon, both our colleagues, obviously, and Mike mentioned that he'd heard from somebody say it was one of the worst baseball clubhouses they've ever seen last year, the Jays. And think about how tightly, yes, you do see each other every day. John Gibbons was on with Jeff Blair as well and said, look, it's one of those things, and I understand it. It's you know, 30 guys and plus your staff and everybody that is... you know, you're going to have some conflicting personalities and you're not always going to agree on everything. And discussion and argument sometimes pretty healthy. But when you hear that, then you hear Jerry Howarth say what he just said, and that was last Thursday on Jeff's show. I talked to somebody on the weekend that is convinced they are doing everything imaginable to move R.A. Dickey, and they'd even like to sign another free agent pitcher. They don't want to trade R.A. Dickey for pitching. They want to trade him for position player help and ease the burden of the contract, but that'll give them some financial room to go get, who knows, a Jason Hamill, a Brandon McCarthy. I don't think they're going to flirt with Irvin Santana again, but they're looking. Maybe this means something good for Marco Estrada. Maybe he is an option, like Jay Happ, to be in the starting rotation with no R.A. Dickey. Bottom line is, there's too many voices, Andrew, and I'm a lot less convinced than ever that they're not even remotely interested in trading Mark Burley. They're incredibly interested in trading R.A. Dickey.
Yeah, and I'll say this, before I get in on the bandwagon of boy, deal Dickey, and now we're moving off of him. I think R.A. Dickey has been unnecessarily, unfairly, the whipping boy around here for Blue Jays fans. I think all he's done, and you don't have to love what they gave up for him. You don't. But all he's done is come in here on a pretty decent contract and get you 200 innings. In fact, 439 innings the last 2 years. He doesn't miss any starts. He's won you 14 games in back-to-back years, meaning he's keeping you in ball games. He's saving the bullpen.
Well, he shaved his ERA by a half point as well. He goes 421 to 371. If he went 421 to 471, we're a little more worried about the last two years of his contract. I'm not. And that said, I never discount the – I know there's too much with involving – clubhouse chemistry is not about wizards and magic wands, but – there's some element to it.
They brought in Russell Martin for a reason.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah, you can't... there's no way to quantify, hey, okay, Brady, if clubhouse chemistry is an issue, how many wins and losses? How many wins did it cost him? I don't know. And nobody can quantify that. But you can't tell me it doesn't exist and it doesn't matter. Workplace environments always matter. To anybody in any job, they matter. So it's going to matter in this case right here. And there's just too many people... These are barely even whispers anymore. They're more like murmurs and low talking. about R.A. Dickey not fitting in with his peers.
And the one thing, and I mean this in a respectful way, but the one thing that really jumped out to me about these Howarth comments, I mean, we had Buck Martinez on the air a few days before the Adam Lynn trade.
Yeah.
Now, generally speaking, in baseball, there's nothing wrong with this. If you are the play-by-play voice of the team and you connect with that fan base, you're going to be a positive guy about the team, even a homer, if you will. Buck Martinez came on and said some fairly harsh things on Adam Lynn that surprised us, and wouldn't you know it, Adam Lynn was out the door a few days later. Now we get this from Jerry Howarth. It just wouldn't surprise me if R.A. Dickey's on the way out.
Not in the least.
6:49, Brady and Walker, let's do best and worst.
Best.
Odell Beckham Jr.
And worst.
John Ferguson Jr.
With Brady and Walker.
By the way, you want to weigh in on best and worst or R.A. Dickey, you can give us a text, 59590, at Brady Walker is our Twitter account. Best win, worst loss, best player, worst player. What did you see last night?
Well, let's give best win to the Vancouver Canucks. Now, the Rangers are very good on hometown hockey and punk the Canadians, but it's all Vancouver fans always like to get theirs against Chicago. I don't know if the Blackhawks are still the Canucks' biggest rival. Maybe it's not the California teams. Maybe it's not neither the Alberta teams because they've got each other. They probably like seeing a win against the Blackhawks more than anybody. And they got one last night, 4-1. Wasn't as much for Ryan Miller to do. Made the 24 saves. And Yannick Hansen, who's often a whipping boy among Canucks fans and the blogosphere, now Cy Young candidate, 8 goals, 1 assist through his 21 games this year.
Night,
but he
yeah.
had 3 goals in the 4-1 win.
All right, worst loss, I'll give it to the Miami Dolphins. Now, I liked the Dolphins' effort yesterday. I really did in Denver. Ryan Tannehill is really making an impression on me with how he's played the last. I mean, it's beyond a small sample size now. He's had a good 6, 7, 8 weeks in a row. That said, this was a crucial game for Miami, and it looked like they had it in hand. But in comes Peyton Manning to do his thing. 22 points in the fourth quarter, and the Broncos come all the way back for a 39-36 win over the Dolphins. A tough loss because a lot of teams in the AFC winning yesterday. The Ravens have a chance to win tonight, and a lot of teams are 7-4. If you're the Dolphins, you're 6-5 with a tough schedule still to come, or I guess I want to say that. An average schedule
still to come. Yeah, it's very winnable to win 4 of their last 5, sure.
Dolphins get back in it, but they're already a game behind everybody, so that's tough. Worst player.
Worst player. And I don't know if I'm being harsh here, because look at the circumstances. They're playing New England. They're playing in Foxborough, but Matt Stafford, his accuracy continues to be a struggle for a lot of Lions observers and Lions fans. He was 18 of 46. Didn't even complete 40% of his passes. Had a 49.5 quarterback rating and only threw the one pick. This is tricky, right? Yet they had to draft Matt Stafford. They don't regret drafting Matt Stafford out of Georgia 5 years ago. Hell, the other first-round quarterbacks of that draft were Josh Freeman and Mark Sanchez. So Stafford was obviously well above everyone else. And they extended his contract a couple years ago. But you're starting to wonder, does he hold them back? Does he hold them back slightly, and is he elite? How much has Calvin Johnson done to make Matt Stafford a bit of a yards machine and a yards monster at times with his 4,000-yard season? So not a good game. That Lions host Chicago Thanksgiving on City TV at 12:30. They have to win that football game if they even want to make the playoffs now. Think about that.
All right, best player. There's one guy to give it to. I know his team lost, but Odell Beckham Jr., what a coming out party last night for the New York Giants. He was targeted 11 times by Eli Manning. He caught 10 of them for 146 yards and 2 touchdowns, including what will be the play of the season. A first quarter, one-handed, leaping, I don't even know how to describe it. What a touchdown catch last night.
And there was a penalty on the play. There was pass interference on the play. So they would have had first and goal at the one had he not caught that ball, and some guys just give in at that point. I'll tell you what, it's the most amazing. See, we saw Randy Moss do some incredible things. It's the most amazing catch I've ever seen. A lot of people mentioned the David Tyree catch, and I just look at that as fluky. Is that wrong? Look at it as a total fluke.
And that was
all skill.
That was his last play he ever did. Yes. That was all skill. And we're going to see more of that from Odell Beckham. What about the play a few years ago? Who was it for Cincinnati where he did a flip over the guy into the end zone? Now, that was pretty impressive.
After he caught the ball. That was probably Dalton's rookie year. It wasn't that long ago. Was that the guy? That wasn't T.J. Houshmandzadeh with the long
game. No, somebody it was not. Though. It was not. I want to say.
I can't think of who it was.
Caldwell? Is that
accurate? Shea Caldwell?
Yeah, maybe. It was.
Former Patriot maybe. Also.
That I mean, it's the only play I could think of.
But
where...
it's the Beckham catch. Maybe it affected it that it was in the first half, but it kind of got upstaged by
Jerome Simpson.
By the Romo comeback.
It was
really?
Jerome Simpson. Yeah.
Jerome Simpson.
6:54, Brady and Walker. Odell Beckham, just coming up party. And I know they're 3-7, but next season, you get Victor Cruz back, and there's Beckham on the other side. It'd still be dangerous. It'd be very dangerous. Brady Walker at 7:02, the Leafs. We'll talk about them, their win over Detroit, and this last up-and-down tumultuous week. In the long run, could it be actually a positive for this team going forward?
And why you may not see James Reimer anytime soon again for the Toronto Maple Leafs in net. We'll explain that at 7:02 as well.